Well, I guess we'll get rolling. Quick review, we went up to 357 last time.
I don't know if she's turned in off or not.
I think she took off with Zoe because Zoe was crying.
Okay.
I seem seen. Well, there we are.
Yeah, no, I'm still here. I just turned my sound down.
Okay.
All right. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you great. Thank you.
Okay, good. We talked about the serpent of God last time. It's another way of saying what we've been saying all along, as far as I understand it, that the divine has this instinctual aspect, phonic aspect, which is what Jung is trying to bring into awareness. Then we had the image of his being a son of a mother, and her not being able to really take him until he is cleansed. And then we got into all that talk about, okay, so what is cleansing? And there were two basic ideas. One, you cleanse by not getting your hands dirty in life, so to speak, transcending. And that's what he's tempted to do, but he's thrown back away from that. What he realizes is he has to get his hands into life, live life, until he has fulfilled himself, and cleanliness in that sense, purity of accomplishment in that sense, is the way he has to go. Then we have the image of Christ, which we saw way back in the Thomas a Kempis, his rejection of Thomas a Kempis, the imitation of Christ, where he recognizes the reality of this divine being, but sees it not as a model to emulate, but as a person who has fulfilled himself as we must fulfill ourselves. So he's re-understood Christ. And then we ended up with Elijah and Salome on 357. Remember, they were early on. And they come back in a dream. So I'm about a little bit more than halfway down on 357. Elijah says, I've become weak, I am poor, an excess of my power has gone to you, my son. You took too much from me. Which, you know, I would take to mean that he's begun to integrate what Elijah represents. Which would be the Logos side. I've heard strange and incomprehensible things, and the peace of my depths became disturbed. Now what we're going to find out is Elijah thinks things still are as they were. And what is that as they were? I believe it's belief in the old God. And a just, fatherly God, which Jung has said doesn't work anymore.
Are you going to talk about these pages that you gave us at all?
We did talk about it, didn't we?
Kind of. That
Yeah, go ahead.
That I wanted to make. I just found it from my information, especially it was very important to see Apollo and Artemis at Artemis as the opposites that are born into the Greek culture
right.
at that time,
right.
And then when Christ is born, it's like the synthesis of the two, which just kind of blew me away because I hadn't gotten the piece before that, so
mm-hmm.
that was very very helpful to what I'm doing.
But the problem is that Christ is like a partial representation because the serpent is cut out again.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because where was I reading? It said, let's hurry up and take him up to heaven so that the serpent can be.
Right.
So. Was there a handout last time?
Yes.
It was in our email.
Oh, I did email, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Is this?
That's Edinger.
Edinger, okay. And the book is
Archetype of the Apocalypse.
Okay, right.
Should be in your email.
How long ago?
Three
weeks ago.
Yeah.
No, I'll send it to you again.
I can check.
If they have a copier here, we could copy. I have mine.
Don't worry about it. I just,
Well, what it is, Carl? We talked about it with that image of the mother, and that Jung is the son of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
But we understood mother archetypally and not personally.
Right.
And so, and she has a mantle of stars, I think.
Sun, moon, woman.
Yeah. In the text, she has a mantle of stars, and in the book of Revelation, does she have a mantle of stars? The star background, I believe.
I forgot how they said it. And then we compared the mantle of stars to the figure Stella Maris.
Yeah.
Who, in the statues, etc., has a cloak covered in stars.
Right, right.
And then other times she, and where, but the Apocalypse woman has a crown.
Right.
Or rays that end in stars.
I think I've got that.
And then she's standing on the snake. She's in the moon.
She's standing. Clothed, is she clothed in the sun? She's standing on the moon, clothed in the sun. How does that passage go?
I just got that off the internet.
Whose work is this?
Not a clue. Mm-hmm. Do they have a reference on the bottom?
Let's see, Carl. Oh, that's a picture of her too, huh?
Right. Well,
here she is, robed with the sun, standing on the moon, and on her head a crown of 12 stars.
Right.
That's in Revelation.
That's in Revelation.
That's in Revelation.
Right. And Stella Maris has a mantle, or has a robe, which robes are often referred to as mantles, and the mantle is the robe of.
Right.
So Stella Maris, the guiding star, has that robe covered with stars. And oftentimes she's conflated with the woman of the Apocalypse. Right?
I'll take your word for it.
I think he mentions it in here, doesn't he?
Stella Maris?
Well, he doesn't say by name. He just says Mary and her child.
Uh-huh.
And Stella Maris is often has the child with her.
Well, I think what we're circling around a similar archetype as we're treating it. And the point Edinger makes is that he goes from the Red Book to, no, I'm going from the Red Book to Edinger's discussing the Woman of the Apocalypse. Because in both the images is a birth from a mother. And in the book of Revelation, this woman, feet on moon, crown of, or cloak of sun, stars on her head, gives birth to a child. And that child is in danger of being eaten by a serpent. So it's carried up to heaven. And I think the traditional interpretation is, that's Jesus. And as Edinger works with in the book of Apocalypse, he says, well, that can't be Jesus because he's already been born. So that is another development foreshadowed after the Christian eon, in which wholeness is born. But at the time of the book of Revelation, it couldn't be realized. So it had to be brought up to heaven. And the reason it couldn't be realized is that the ego, Western ego, was not able to deal with its serpentine passions. So it had to be etherealized. The other thing that he refers to is that the, now we're going from the Red Book to the Book of Revelation, and then he goes from the Book of Revelation to Greek myth and says the big birth in Greek myth is Apollo and Artemis, and there too there was the danger of a serpent. That's how he brings in the Apollo, Artemis. I forget who was their mother. Leto, I think.
Leto,
yeah. So again, you have a birth in pre-Christian where there was a snake or a serpent ready to eat the children. But there it's two children. Book of Revelation, it's one child. In the Book of Revelation, it's one child and a dangerous serpent. In Jung's vision, it's one child, no danger of serpent. So he sees a progression, and the Book of the Greek myth showing that it's two that are born would mean consciousness of the opposites was just dawning in Greek civilization, in Western civilization, in the Greeks. Just dawning. I mean, if you read Greek tragedy, it's tragedy, 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 because there's no discernment. And discernment, it was born in, the capacity for discernment was born in Greek culture, philosophy. And Jung is heir to this whole development. He is the child, the new child, that won't, that isn't a duality and won't get swept up into heaven, but he still has to deal with the serpent. But now he can deal with the serpent. He doesn't have to be carried aloft.
Safely away.
That's so,
what your hand up.
Yeah.
Here's the picture. Showing the Christ. Somebody going to take the camera.
Yeah, go ahead.
To me, that dragon, where the python is, as they call it in, well, he calls it here too, but in Delphi, that was a big thing about Apollo kills the python and takes over.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why.
Mm-hmm. So it adds to that.
Yeah, this is the answer.
It's astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Now, what that all means practically is, and the point we're making is an interpretive point, is what Jungian psychology is trying to do is overcome that split, that duality, that unresolved pair of opposites, which has plagued Western civilization since its birth, namely spirit and matter. And in what has to happen in order to do that is the serpent can no longer be seen as an adversary. That is one of the ingredients, and that's what Jung has tried to do in his work on alchemy. So what we're seeing then is at the end of the book, of the Red Book, is an image of unity that has essentially addressed a problem plaguing the Western mind for 2,000 years. That's why we went into it so much.
Oh. Okay, so this should be on my email.
Should be. If not, let me know, and I can only send you another one.
3-4 weeks ago. What are these from?
A terrible printer. That's part of the email.
That's part of the email.
Yeah, they're like 4 pages.
Do you have Archetype of the Apocalypse? Do you have the book, Archetype of the Apocalypse? Oh, I'd say it would be in there.
That's in, this is from that?
Yeah. It's kind of convoluted, but it's really important because it sums up the whole book, that this birth of unity, not duality, and where it's the background for what we're doing today, because really this is the foundation of a new theology. The religious task is to unite opposites. Worship is living your life and uniting your opposites. And I feel sure to say that Jung felt this was the meaning of his life. It's a position in psychology, and it's has tremendous religious and cultural implications. It breaks down Descartes, it breaks down the spirit and matter split, and paves the way for a unity of body and mind, you might say. Soul and body, whatever you care to put it. But now, going back to the text, Elijah hadn't figured that out yet.
Just a quick question. When you equate this all with spirit and matter, that almost implies that matter is linked to the serpent. And in other words, dark forces.
Yeah.
And from a Christian point of view, where one is trying to transcend,
right,
and is heaven bound and all that sort of stuff, yes, I can see it. So that's really the context we're talking about,
yeah,
of matter. We aren't talking about assigning outside of the Christian context a dark side to matter.
Well, I think we are. The word matter is used so loosely, probably needs clarification. I think primarily he means desires directed toward the material world. So we really should be saying desires for matter. But it's more than that, because it also includes synchronicity. Matter has a life to it. So I would say it's both. When we say matter, we mean desirousness and giving the material world, as it appears synchronistically, a spiritual importance.
So, now what matter really does not incorporate this, but
not for Jung.
Right.
Yeah.
And what, you know, following our thinking here, we're trying to overcome that idea of that split.
But yeah,
includes a spiritual side.
Okay. Now, Elijah came on the scene before all this happened. So he hasn't figured out that things have changed. He still is living in a world, God above, matter below. Jesus as a ethical paradigm to emulate. And Of course, what that does and why it's happening now in history is, as we've talked about, all that does is allow everything that is not considered sacred to have free reign, namely World War I and World War II. That's why Jungfeld was so important. If God is only good, then all the parts of human experience that are bad are dismissed. We might think we transcend them, but they always come back and seek their revenge. And that revenge is war.
So what you could say maybe is, when this split happened and the devil or Votan sunk into the unconscious, when he came back, his memory or his understanding of the world was at the place where he left. That's why he was so dangerous. He needed to come back.
You could say that. Yep.
Poetry aspect and his runes aspect. Mm-hmm. But what came out was the anger of having been repressed.
The violence, yeah.
The violence.
And Votan is violent anyway.
Right. So the violence came as the first.
But, yeah. But, I mean, if you want to talk about Votan for a second. But I think the difference is Votan existed before the state. So when Votan and the state got together,
yeah,
it was hell to pay.
Because he was out of his historical context.
Yeah.
And that would be any complex that sinks into the unconscious when it comes back out is out of its historical context.
And, you know, Nietzsche, you know, is so often accused of being not pre-Nazi, but Nietzsche emphatically denounces the state as what weak people do to define themselves. You know, try to deal with a bureaucrat. It's impossible. But this is the return. When it does come back, and Jung's point with Nietzsche is, too bad, Nietzsche, whether you like the state or not, this is what happens when these figures return, and we have to be very smart not to let that happen. And Nietzsche wasn't smart enough to know to be careful.
Yes. Personal dealings.
Personal dealings and in anticipating world events. When Nietzsche says, oh, when Zarathustra comes back and it's a new noontime. And Jung says, yeah, look, 70 miles from here, that's the noontime. People are slaughtering themselves. So it might sound antisocial what he's doing, but it actually is really an attempt to take responsibility for all our experience. It just doesn't feel good to the typical Christian mentality. Okay, so Elijah is also the capacity for Logos, and since Jung has begun thinking about these things, Elijah is weakened. And then we have this, the voice spoke first of a knife cutting something or perhaps harvesting. Perhaps the grapes that go to the wine press. Perhaps the one wearing the red robe treads the wine press from which blood flows. Thereupon the voice of gold, thereupon the voice spoke of gold that lies below, that kills whoever touches it. Then it mentioned fire that burns terribly and that should flare up in our time. And then there was a malicious word that I would rather not utter. That word was about the death of God. This is Elijah reporting a voice and how much it upsets him. And he's upset that this voice says God is dead. Because he's the old system. And we've talked about this wine and blood many times, I think. Do we need to go through that? What was implicit, I believe, in that passage is that the blood would be war. The blood would also be adultery. So that Jung is drawing a parallel between what is driving him sexually, erotically might be a better way to put it, and what has broken loose in the war. Both of those are raw examples of the dark side pushing forward. What Jung will eventually do is find a way to honor that dark stuff without living it out. That's the wine. But in that paragraph is essentially 60 years of work. And below all of this is gold. It's a dangerous gold because it represents new values. And if you're living in the old values, as Elijah does, it is felt as destructive. You know, he's dead now, he wouldn't know him anyway, but when I was growing up, I was sort of the black sheep of the church, and raised Methodist, where everything is clean and right and moral, and I remember the preacher preaching against women wearing shorts downtown. Well, and of course, when I was in divinity school, he didn't think I would ever make it because I didn't believe in Christ, which I told him, not in his way, but it was interesting. He got into what's called primal screen therapy, had a heart attack on the floor. See, it was just too much. Then was convinced he was homosexual. And guess who he called to talk to? Me. That killed him. He couldn't find room for what had been released in him in his old Christian structure. That's the danger of the gold. There's nothing wrong with homosexuality, obviously, but for him, that positive value of being able to accept gays, because maybe he had homoerotic feelings, destroyed him. So I believe that's what is meant here by the gold is destructive. If you're not able to let the old go.
New wine bursting the old wine.
New wine bursting the old wine. Exactly. And the terrible fire, I believe again, is the war. And the feeling that he is driven by a terrible fire. At this point, of course, this he then works out. Now, I don't know whether it helps, whether to believe it or not, but when I was over in Switzerland, one of the guys there knew members of the Jung family, and one of the analysts, and told me this. I don't know whether it's true or not. I didn't find this guy worthy of suspicion particularly, but he said that when Jung was contemplating his affair with Toni Wolff, he first dismissed it. And then his son had a dream that Jung had a choice between a white angel and a black angel. And Jung chose the white angel. And then something terrible happened to the son in the dream. That, according to my colleague, was when Jung decided having an affair with Toni Wolff would be choosing the black angel, and that's what I have to do to protect my child. So, you know, he talks about evil a lot and this fire and the destruction. That is both the war and what he's realizing is assaulting him in the sexual experience, I believe. And of course, then it's a starting point of his work, which is, okay, how can I live this without being hurtful? And then in comes all the things we've talked about, the uniting of spirit and matter, the alchemical work. That's all going to come out of this problem. And there is a way to do it, which he eventually got to, but only after he had gone through the experience. But in that, the old God dies. And so, Jung gets back to them and says, Elijah, things have changed. That's at the very bottom of 1 Kama 357.
Where would Elijah go in the end? And we talk about everything in the unconscious sort of being connected, mixed up.
Yeah.
Where would Elijah go? This may be a hard way to talk about it, but where would he sort of go?
Where would he hang out?
Yeah, if he's not going to be in connection with the rest of the unconscious, which Jung is obviously in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
Where?
I don't know.
The back of the beyond.
The back of the beyond. It is a logical contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it's a valid psychological reality.
And to contact this part, I mean, this part of the unconscious just came up to Jung without Jung going after it, it sounds, in this vision.
Because it came in a dream.
Yeah. So it came to him for contact.
Mm-hmm.
And then to communicate with it is to think with it?
You know, I ask myself why, I keep asking myself, which we've answered to some extent, why is it important that the scrutinies were appended to the Red Book? Because they're not in the Red Book, remember. And I would say Jung is reflecting back on what just happened.
Mm-hmm. He's summing everything up.
He's summing it up.
Mm-hmm.
And what the return of Elijah is about is letting Jung know how far he's come. And what he's not for, and what he is for, and that there is a difference. Now, when you talk with Christians, they'll always say, oh yes, but that's in the Bible, and it's, you know, as if this is not something different. Jesus said, be as wise as serpents. But what they don't grasp is what it really means to live the serpent, what it is to be an adulterer and have a conscience, what it is to watch a whole continent go up in flames.
Well, and he offers us a point of evolution here in Scrutinies that it wasn't in the previous part of the book,
yeah,
which is the star woman.
Yes, and that's something you guys have helped me see, that we are really also seeing, it's both a reflection back on, and it contains new images of that third united thing, mother being one of them.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about, you know, I talked a lot about the Islamic design and why I thought he reverted to Islamic design.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that the Islamic design is, it's mathematical. And it's an abstraction, it's an abstract representation of feeling. Because they use it in their poetry, just like that. And they use it to decorate all of their religious houses of worship. And this design is like an abstraction of feeling.
So what they've done in that way is unite science with feeling. They've united the opposites in that way. And I can see why instinctively he would turn to that kind of design, because it's uniting basically, you know, science back with the feeling function.
I like it.
How do they use it in poetry?
They, well, I probably have it in here still, but they'll take the design of their letters and they'll write a poem and make it a shape, and that shape is the thing they're describing in their poem.
Oh, I see. So it's in their calligraphy.
Mm-hmm. And then also, of course, the mosques are decorated in Islamic, in their tessellations, their images. And those are algorithmic representations that they were even unconscious of at the time. So they're mathematical. And but then that mathematics is used as to house their whole feeling, because it surrounds them in their place of worship and expresses their feeling. So it's a union of that science, the mathematics of science, and the feeling function.
In the content of the words in the poems, they also reflect that. What you're saying is the calligraphic forms in which the content is written reflects it. But the ideas or images or thoughts in the poems also reflect that. That's what
So their shape reflects their feeling. The shapes they use.
Reflects
their feeling.
So then, whatever the content is, would presumably be in sync with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's true, but I'm just not familiar with their poetry.
Well, a complete non sequitur. I will mention as a little comic relief. You know, I had this fellowship in Zurich from the Rotary Club, and I got invited a couple times to lunch with some real mucky mucks. And one of them was the director of the Zurich Chamber Orchestra, Edmond de Stutz. You'll find his CDs all over the place. Very interesting guy. And we got talking about Jung, because one of his violinists, I think, had become an analyst, was on our faculty. And I made the comment that Jung felt that the harmony of the world could be expressed in mathematics or music. And he pounded at the table. He says, "Yes, but in music, there's hope." I won't forget that. Okay, 357, second column. This is a bit weird, I found. I think Salome is being a bit coquettish and almost flirtatious. She's saying the new is important, but you really aren't dealing with the new. You are not pleasurable enough for her. Elijah is the one who is interested about in what is to come. Which, of course, is all false. Now, I think that's so. Reason that's so important, if you remember back on 343, he finally locks up the anima. So he's no longer in danger of being seduced by these wiles. So he's going to challenge what she's saying.
The old, "I'm not being intolerant, you're being intolerant of me" argument.
It's classic, isn't it? You see, you can see what he means by the anima. Had he not seen that in himself, that's the way he would have argued. And then Elijah goes on a rant about what he's seen. Fire, gleaming gold, distant thunder, wind roaring, earthquake. And he says, that wasn't God. That was pagan. See, he's still separating the phonic and the divine. And just a paragraph before, Salome was trying to give support to that. And Jung says to Elijah, you heard correctly, but you interpreted it wrong. Shall I tell you about it? The world has acquired a new face, a new cover was thrown over it. How odd that you don't know. See, he's now talking back to these figures. I think this next bit is probably clear. God, that the one God is dead. See where I am there, middle second column? He disintegrated into the many, and thus the world became rich overnight. Now that would be a praxis. And human beings became, the soul of human beings became rich too. One God became two, a multiple one whose body consists of many gods, and a single one whose body is a man, and yet he is brighter and stronger than the sun. So we saw that pass by us. First, Jung said earlier, oh, the one God is dead, and God is a multiplicity. And then he says, oh no, there is a one in the multiplicity. That's what he's driving at here. But that one would be not separate from above the multiplicity. The one would be the guidance that comes through the multiplicity. So there is still a unitary God, but again, ironically, it's a unitary God with a divinity among a polytheistic range of gods.
What?
It's a unity within the polytheistic range of gods.
Oh.
Which are really representing the opposites.
Or the centrality that's trying to come through the opposites.
Well, the polytheistic range of gods could represent the opposites, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. And
yeah.
The one is the, what you said, the mediating and pulling it all together.
Yeah, yeah.
Very Hindu.
Yes. I thought of
partly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then, likewise, the soul has become multiple. A little farther down from that first line of the paragraph starts, what shall I? First she divided herself into a serpent and a bird, then into a father and mother, and then to Elijah and Salome. So they're the two poles, spirit and matter, desire and meaning. Put any labels on those that you wish. And then he says something which I think is amazing. I have to separate from you. And Salome. Before, he was completely at their mercy. You know, another kind of taking stock moment. And then the voices come back and contradict him. I don't like this multiplicity. Salome says, the simple alone is pleasurable. And he says, Salome, that's not true. He is now standing against her. What a distance. Well, we've seen the anima come on, be taken seriously, and then put in her place. And then 358, she's convinced.
Came right around, man.
After 3 years of every other week meetings.
Just like a woman. Just call them out. She ignores you forever, and then you can't believe suddenly she just flips on you.
Mm-hmm. So I think that first half of the first column on 358 is simply the recognition of these figures that there's something that's going on and they don't like it. Maybe they'll take it seriously, maybe they won't, but their security and their conviction that they have the truth has been shaken. You know, I just said, has there ever been anything new, and so on. But Jung is rejecting them. And Salome says, you know what you're saying appeals to me. And that really is what troglodytes say. Oh, there's nothing new under the sun. So just relax.
It's very stoic, too.
Yeah. Don't go off half-cocked. Now, so I think that is an end of a long reverter. And what comes next is, that was the talk, now comes the walk. They disappeared into the dark night, see where I am halfway down on the first column. And I returned to the burden signified by my existence. And I sought to do everything correctly that seemed to me to be a task, and to take every way that seemed to me to be necessary for myself. So again, I think we're seeing, okay, I've understood it, now I gotta live it. And what a hassle. but my dreams became difficult and laden with anxiety, and I did not know why. And I think what we'll see is the why is now he's got to do something about it, and he can fail. One night my soul suddenly came to me as if worried and said, "Listen to me, I am in great torment. The son of the dark womb besieges me. Therefore your dreams are also difficult, since you feel the torment of the depths, the pain of your soul, and the sufferings of the gods." So what I think is going on there, how do I take what I have learned and put it into life step by step?
Probably a lot of it's reflecting what he's having to say to Emma and what he's having to say to Tony.
Yeah.
And all of that. Emma could have come to him and said, "Okay, so if we go with your plan..."
Yeah.
"What's in it for me?"
Well,
or whatever. You know.
According to this fellow I talked to, what she did say was, "I'm out of here." She was prepared to divorce him. And I'm not sure what changed the mind, but it wasn't like, "Oh, okay, I'll accept it." Mm-hmm. It was a huge war. And I think that's what he's facing probably at this point.
I wonder if that dream that you just talked about the son having the dream about the dark and
the bright angel. I think that's what held him to his course.
Yeah.
Maybe it affected Emma, too.
Yeah.
Maybe he told her, and she goes... Mm.
Oh, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
What? He told her what?
They were speculating. Yeah, the dream that he...
About the son?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or maybe Emma had her own dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You got to remember, these people are... So what is it, 1916? They're not even 40 years old. And I read somewhere her family is the second richest in Swiss.
Wow.
So she could have easily left.
Mm-hmm.
Kicked him out. I'm sure she paid for the house.
Yeah, taking the kids and...
Yeah.
A little bit.
What? And... a friend of mine was married to a Swiss woman, divorced her. She was really impossible. And they screwed him to the wall. The courts are very against the man in the divorce in Switzerland. At least as of, this was 30 years ago, but I would imagine at this time. So Jung had everything to lose by taking this step.
But by not taking the step, he had even more.
He had more to lose, and I think that's what he was faced with. He was faced with choices of degrees of wrongness. And, you know, he sided it with his children in a way. If we go with that dream. So what follows now... he doesn't have the language yet, but in our retrospective language, we would say he's realizing that the self has a task for him to do. And to do that, to hear that task and to put that task into reality causes suffering. First of all, it's a lot of hard work. Second of all, you probably piss a lot of people off. And you have to deal with the consequences of bringing something new in, which nobody wants at the moment. And it's a suffering for the self, because the self wants to be realized. and to the extent that it isn't realized, it generates anxiety. So that's how I understand these things, like the gods need a human mediator or rescuer. We would say later that self and the ego stand in their reciprocal relationship. Man paves the way to crossing over to divinity. Ego turns to self. I give you a frightening dream so that your face would turn to the gods. In other words, our dreams, when they're negative, are reason to inquire, how am I not serving the self so that it's turned against me? I let the torment reach you so that you would remember the suffering gods. You do too much for men since they are the masters of your world. The ego, in other words, can be too concerned about adapting to the outer world and not enough to hearing the inner world. You can, in effect, help men only through the gods. In other words, what you do in the world is a service from the self to the world. Not directly. Alleviate the burning torment of the gods. We would say by serving the self, its overburdened potential is neutralized. Let's take a stretch. Do you want to check in with Nana?
Nana. She may have.
Hey.
Hi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Could you hear?
It's really nice to sleep and the dog.
Well, either we're very boring or we're in doubt, one or the other.
Oh, she's
a good thing.
Oh, that is a good thing. Look at that. Bless her heart.
I did want to mention when we were talking about the Star Woman that the Grail, there is a Star Woman. I don't know if Gary remembers that part.
Oh, I didn't remember
that. Yeah. What role does she play, Kathy? Do you remember?
Isn't there a Red Star Woman in the Grail legend?
I believe there is,
yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah.
Carol? Carol was asking what role she plays in the Grail.
I don't remember. Doesn't she guide Percival?
I can't remember.
I'll have to look.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just rocking.
Is that your new chair?
What?
Is that your new rocking chair?
Okay. Do you want a little break now?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go get a bottle warmed up.
Okay.
Okay. We're taking a break.
Okay. Time for bottle.
That's what we're saying. That ours could be a little stronger.
Yeah, it could.